The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
Well, you know what? It's time to go drag racing! 200 plus miles per hour.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Straight Lining with Stevie. Stevie Letemp, back from Norwalk and getting ready to go to California. Stevie, how's things going, man?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jack. There's never a dull moment. I can say I had a great experience up at Norwalk, Ohio, where we had the Halloween Classic, where Bill Bader and family put on one of the darndest shows I've ever seen. It was 5 days of drag racing and partying. We actually had 1,300 race cars there, if you can imagine that. It was awesome.
Wow. And now we're going to get things started right away here. We got we have Andy Kelly, and we have Damon Hazelton as well in the drag racing ranks. And I believe we have Andy Kelly on the line with us now.
Yes, sir.
I tell you, I can smell a little bit of nitromethane coming right through the telephone line here. Andy, how you doing this evening?
Man, I'm doing great. I can always smell nitromethane.
I'll bet you can. Just a quick question here. Andy, do you ever have any problems going through the airport? Because I know nitromethane gets into your shoes and clothing and stuff. Do they ever stop you and check you?
Believe it or not, no. But my wife tells me I reek of it every day. And whether I'm with a car or not, if I'm at work or whatever, when I come home, all they can smell is nitromethane. Or it might be that I'm always talking about it.
Well, you know, that's really kind of strange when you think about it, that it actually goes through the airport. I would have thought that nitro would have been picked up by their detectors. But apparently you're pretty clean whenever you do leave the racetrack then.
Yeah, I can't believe it, because when I come home, my wife's always griping about me, my dirty clothes and the way I look. So, but luckily we've made it to the airport with no problems, and especially what goes on with the terrorism and everything else. But we've been lucky.
Well, Andy, looks like you've had a pretty good year with IHRA. I believe you're currently you're number five in the points you finished up this year. And so it hasn't been that bad of a season. And also, just a little curiosity, what's your plans for the future?
Well, right now we're trying to find sponsorship. I mean, this is a never-ending battle. You know, the 07 season was phenomenal for us. You know, this is our first full year in a Nitro Funny car. We ran four races last year with IHRA, and we were just getting our feet wet. But the year we've had this year, I mean, with very minimal parts breakage, we've ran over 300 miles per hour. Our goal was to finish in the top five, and thank God we did finish, number five in the points, which is just great for a team that's funded basically out of pocket and basically what the car brought in. You know, I definitely, definitely love IHRA. You know, I want to thank Evan Noel, and Torco for all they've done to bring the funny cars back. If it wasn't for that, you know, I don't know what we'd be doing, trying to find match races or something. But, you know, we definitely want to run next year, you know, all the IHRA events, and I honestly believe we have a car that can contend for the championship. We just need the more funding to keep, you know, fresher parts in our car and the crew together and, you know, just to keep things going smoothly.
Well, Andy, curiosity, just how did you get into drag racing?
Well, I was actually born into it. My dad run funny cars, actually hand-built a funny car before I was born. And, I was 2 or 3 years old, he sold the car. And I guess when I was 8, he bought another car, one of Ken Benny's old cars. And we met up with a guy named Ricky Bowie. My dad's vision is not the greatest in the world. And met up with a guy named Ricky Bowie, and he offered to drive the car for us and sort of, you know, help us with the car. And that's how it got started. But I've always, and everybody said they could see it in my eyes that I wanted to drive that funny car. And when I turned 17, back then you had to be 17 to drive a pro car. And when I turned 17, I had never actually been down the racetrack in anything in my life until I got behind an alcohol funny car. And I'm going to tell you, I was in for a big shock.
Holy cow. That was how you actually started out?
That's how I started. I mean, I had driven, back then you could drive the truck, the tow vehicle down the racetrack to go pick up the car. And, you know, I was 12, 13 years old driving our pickup to go pick up the car after, you know, our car had made a run. And I would always drive the car back, you know, down the return road. But, you know, going very slow in a funny car, the steering, you know, you have no steering and you couldn't see over the injector. But I never, ever took the Christmas tree until I got into a funny car.
Wow, what a violent way to...
Baptism of fire, man.
Wow.
Oh, it was crazy. Everybody said I was crazy, but I guess you have to be a little bit crazy to get behind one of those beasts. But
sometimes I think the screws have to be just a little loose in certain places to get behind one of them, because when that lid comes down, boy, what a different world you enter.
You know, it's amazing because people say, how do you take it when the body comes down? But I'll be honest with you, I'm probably the most passionate person you will ever talk to about funny cars. I love funny cars. And in the driver's seat, when that car is running, and I see my dad, my crew out there doing their deal, and when that body comes down, I mean, it's like I'm in a different zip code. I'm in my own zone, and that's the most comfortable I am, period, at the racetrack, is when that body comes down, and I'm looking down the drag strip.
You know, just to give the fans a little idea how hard it is to hold a number five number in IHRA, there were 23 different funny car drivers that competed in the National Hot Rod Association for 2007. So that is a handful, and there's some big names that came in there, and I will say that Andy Kelly went right on by them. At number five spot, that's a lot of prestige right there. So with that said and done, you're looking for sponsors. You plan to run the full circuit next year?
If we find the funding, we are. I know we'll be at San Antonio for the first race. We're buying some new parts now, and I know we'll run that deal, and I know we'll run Rockingham because Rockingham is about 190 miles from our home. After that, I really don't know if we don't find the funding what our plans are. I hope we're going to be invited to do some more match races for the Thunder Jam series with IHRA. Man, you talking about a lot of fun. We did a deal down at Carolina Dragway this year with Bob Gilbertson, and it was a 8-mile track, great track. The people were just outstanding that were there. I mean, that place was packed out. And, you know, no points, you know, no qualifying. It was long, smoky burnouts and just hauling butt. And
you talk about 8th mile. Now, when we go down to San Antonio this year, it's going to be an 8th mile national event, the first time ever for a national event in 8th Mile. Now, we ran 8th Mile last year because of problems, but this is going to be set up, and everybody this time is coming in with their cars set up for 8th Mile. What kind of changes do you have to make, and how do you think you'll be able to deal with guys like Dale Greasy and Jack Wyatt, Bob Gilbertson, and Terry Haddock? The list just goes on.
You know, it does go on, and there's some great, great, fantastic drivers and teams out there that's going to be competing in the 08 season. You know, that showed at the end part of 07. The basic setup of the car, you know, our car can run, you know, 330s in the 8th mile, and that's, you know, we set it up for bear, you know, from the start line to the finish line, whether it's 8th mile, quarter mile. You know, there's really not a whole lot of changes you can do, and I hear people talking about, you know, there's a lot you can do, but there's really not. You know, San Antonio is a great track. And, you know, from a owner, my dad actually owns the team, and I sort of co-own the team. You know, running the car out of pocket, I love the 8th mile. You know, it's a whole lot cheaper on parts because from the 8th mile to the finish line, the quarter mile, you know, the motors are getting wound up, they're getting on the rev limiter, they're pouring all the nitromethane to it, all the ignition timing, and that's when you see a lot of catastrophe. But as just a pure driver, I love quarter mile. I love going 300 miles per hour.
Well, let me ask you this. When we talk about 300 mile an hour, now, I've seen it on a lot of the on the top fuel dragsters where they're starting to what we call chunking rubber, where the slicks, if you can visualize this, Jack, hunks of rubber out of the slicks, sometimes 2 and 3 inch circular sections just are gone off the tires all the way down to that final cord. I mean, it's really close to tearing up some tires. Do you have problems with that, do you think, in the 8th mile, or will that eliminate some of that tire chunking?
No, I definitely believe it'll eliminate the tire chunking. The tire chunking really, really creates at the finish line whenever you actually lift off the throttle, and especially the track that's got a lot of glue down. You know, all the force of the tire going down the racetrack, when you lift off the throttle, you know, the -5 to 6 G that actually occurs, the tire tries to back, you know, instead of going forward, it'll try to sort of back up, and that's what brings the rubber out. And there's been times I got out of the car, and I look at the tire, and I think, where in the world did that tire go to, you know? And just for a split second, you think, you know, that could have been bad, but, you know, you just have to put it out of your mind and put another set of tires on it and go for the next round.
Andy, when you're...
Goodyear's worked on this thing real serious. They've tried four different types, and there's steadily testing new tires. Hopefully they do find an answer to it. But till then, it's kind of a scary thing. That's something, if the race fans ever saw what I call tire chunking, I don't know how many of them would ever want to ride on that tire. But yet it seems to get it down the track. When you say, now, actually, it's not the acceleration that's causing the problem. There's too much bite, you're saying, on the top end of the track when you decelerate. When it reverses the angle of the tire, that's when it's starting to pull the clots of rubber out of it?
That's when it mostly tries to pull the rubber. Now, if you see a tire blister, you know, that can be created through a lot of tire spin down the racetrack, and it, you know, it'll pull the center of the tire out. Now, that's totally different of chunking the tire. Yeah, chunking the tire mostly occurs in the shutdown area when you lift off the throttle, get off the throttle, and the car sort of, you know, is planted going down the racetrack with all the downforce, and when you get off the throttle, you can always see the car sort of move around a little bit, and the tires are going with the car, and that's when it's trying to pull the rubber out.
Andy, for us mere mortals, I mean, you know, there's not very many people on this planet who either have what it takes or gets the opportunity to go down a track at 300 miles an hour. And, I mean, it's pretty unusual, you know, so... It all happens so fast. How does that seem to you? Does it seem like it takes, is it like a forever thing? Like where, you know, I mean, I know, like, I used to fool around with motorcycles a bit, and sometimes when I get on the hairy edge of something, time seemed to change a little bit and slow down. Is it kind of like that, or what's it like doing that?
Well, the cars are so fast. You know, when I first started doing my license deal, because you have to, you know, have a license to drive a, you know, any car, you know, that's faster than an OET. But I had to upgrade my license from my alcohol car. And just to give an example, my alcohol car would run around 240 and a quarter mile. Well, this nitro car is running 250 plus at the eighth mile. There's a huge difference. And actually, in 2001, we sold everything we had except for our tractor trailer. I mean, we sold car, parts, tools, everything. And we knew we was going to go to a nitro car. That's me, you know, my dad's dream and my dream, you know, as long as I can remember, is to have a nitro car. Well, you know, doing my license run, the car, and I had been in the car in 4 years, and the car was so fast, was so much faster than I was, it was unbelievable. And there was times, you know, when I was doing license runs that I was thinking to myself, I don't know if I can drive this car. Because they're so hard, and they accelerate so fast, they try to find the groove in the track. You know, it's trying to go left, right, center, left, right, center, you know, whatever. You're actually having to drive the car. But the first four runs that I made in that car, it went 523 at 274, and I shut it off about like 900 foot. But the runs, and I can really tell this year, because we run all the IHRA races. You know, we ran the qualifying runs and went to a final round, and I can tell the more runs that I make, my mind is getting more to speed with the car, and therefore I can really tell more or less at 600 or 700 foot when the clutch is locking up and, you know, it's going down the racetrack, I'm more focused and I can really tell what the car's doing now versus when I first started driving the car, and I hope I'm driving the car when I'm 100 years old, but every run in the car I learn a little more. And I get up to speed with the car. I mean, you realize these cars run from a dead standstill, you know, to 100 miles an hour in less than one-tenth of a second. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
That's just hard to comprehend. You know, in fact, if you, it's like if you blink your eye, you just went 60 feet.
Exactly. I mean, these cars move 60 foot in nine-tenths of a second. You know, 100 miles an hour basically in 1 second, 250 miles an hour in 3 seconds. It's you know, sitting back here, me talking about it right now, it's like, that's unbelievable. But you can watch it on TV, but until you actually come to an IHRA event and see these nitro cars run, you know, my friends, my family, you know, I try to tell them about it. And when I'm speaking, I know they're thinking I'm crazy because there's no way a car can perform like that. Well, I had some family actually come to Rockingham, the last IHRA race, and their eyeballs were so big after we had made a run. I mean, they were speechless because they just, you know, they see it on TV. TV don't do it justice. Until you can hear the cars, feel the sheer power of a nitro car, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I had my first experience with that this year. I went to Rockingham in the first race of the year and had the opportunity to be right down there on the line taking pictures. And it is breathtaking. It doesn't even, and I don't even know how you describe it.
It is just unbelievable how much power these cars have. I mean, you know, and what's amazing is getting back to driving the car is when I'm in the car, I've been asked this question so many times, you know, what does it feel like in the car? Well, when you're in the car, and I'm just speaking for me personally, I'm so focused and in the zone, I don't realize how powerful the car is. My focus is to get that car down the racetrack, keep it in the center of the groove, you know, and do the best job I can of driving. But now when I'm standing outside of the cars, watching the cars run, it's different than night and day watching the cars go down the racetrack on the start line and being in the race car. They're so much more powerful outside the car. It's like, man, I can't believe that's what everybody feels when I'm inside of my race car.
I think you sound like you're probably pretty well running on a lot of adrenaline when you're inside there.
Oh, it's nothing but adrenaline. You don't really realize how fast you're going until you get out of the car. When you get out of the car and then you think about your run, that's when you realize how fast you went.
Have you ever had any close calls?
Actually, yes. when we put this Nitro Funny car together, my dad told me that, you know, number one, he's going to set me on fire. Number two, I'm going to hit the wall. And number three, other crap's going to happen. Well, guess what? We did it all before my license was over. And it was my fault. We had a mouth airline come off in the clutch system. And it was the last run I had to make to finish my license deal. And the car was, like I say, my mind being up to speed with the car, the car was really flying. And I guess about 800 foot, I felt the car just lay down. Well, I kept my foot in it. And next thing I seen was nothing but black. It blew the blower off the car, blew the body up a little bit off the chassis. I couldn't see nothing in the car. Went over and hit the wall. You know, it was just a big mess. And not in running the car out of pocket, we basically set out another 6 months just trying to fix what I tore up. But you know, other than that, you know, we've been really fortunate. You know, Richard Hartman. We met Richard Hartman through his dad, Virgil, and John Smith, and you know, if it hadn't been for Richard, I don't know what we would have done. But he makes so many parts on this race car, and is a great. He's driven Nitro Funny cars as well, so using him as basically a sounding board, and him being a great teacher, he can tell me a lot of things that has brought me up to speed so much faster than just trying to do it on my own.
Well, I'll tell you what, it sounds like it's got to be a rush. It's one thing I never had the opportunity to do, not that I wanted to. Because probably I knew too much about them, but it has to be a real rush. And I will tell all the race fans out there, if you're in the San Antonio area, when we go down there with the IHRA and compete with this new eighth mile format that they're going to try for the first time ever, believe me, it's going to be a rush. It's going to be you can sit in the stands and see the finish line. You'll be at the finish line. Where a lot of times you're in the stands and you have to look at the scoreboards to tell what really, you know, who won the race and who lost. Where when you run eighth mile, you're sitting right on top of the finish line almost. You're halfway there. And so it makes a big difference, I think, on the excitement, what the people are going to see. And I do believe there's going to be some incredible numbers that's going to come out of them. And guys just like Andy Kelly will come in there loaded for bear. Believe me, there'll be some hitters. Cruz Petrocan's always in there. And I talked about Bob Gilbertson, and, of course, you know, Dale Greasy Jr., the champion, and Jack Wyatt. And there's going to be some really, really heavy hitters that will come rolling into that race. And eighth-mile racing is kind of new. I mean, you've done it in match racing, but it's a different game because match racing is not the end of the world if you don't win. But when you're competing for points, you know, this is something extremely critical that they got to win those rounds. They've got to make those rounds, and you're also on the clock. How much time do they allow you when I speak of on the clock? On
that? In between rounds?
Yeah.
75 minutes. If they're not calling for rain. Now, if they're calling for rain and they're trying to push it up, they will push it up on you, and you'll get 50 minutes, 40 minutes. You know, they're just trying to get the show, you know, finished up. And it's good for us. So we don't want to have to drive another 1,000 miles to finish a race up. IHRA don't want to incur the expense of bringing everyone else back, you know, to finish a race. But you're talking about the stands and the eighth-mile racing. You know, if you notice, you know, most of the tracks around, they finish at the eighth-mile mark.
Oh, yeah, you're
no,
right.
No one can tell if a car is running 300 or 330 miles per hour at the finish line when they're at the eighth-mile mark. You know, and it's hard to see the finish line. And everybody wants to be at the starting line and around the eighth-mile mark. That's where the fans, that's where the excitement is.
So really all the energy and all the excitement will be in that eighth-mile type racing then.
Exactly. Well, basically, if you're at the finish line, I mean, if you're at the eighth-mile mark watching the cars, you're just looking at the back end of the car to get on the racetrack. You can't tell how fast they're going at all. But, you know, getting back at the driver, I love to run the big speed. But as a car owner, I love the eighth-mile because it's cheaper on parts.
And money has become a major factor.
It is a very major factor.
Respect, it's you know, that you mentioned that very factor that everyone will talk to tonight. One of the things they're looking for is sponsors, and money has become a major factor. In fact, two of the people that I'll talk to later very possibly may not be able to compete next year due to that. And these guys are tough. I mean, they are champions.
That's a shame because the price has been driven up so much to run. You know, and it's not just a nitro funny car. It's every class is expensive. Before you even get the race car out of the trailer, the expense you incur to get the truck, you know, to get the truck and trailer there safely, you know, you got to have somebody that can drive the transporter to get it there safely. You got to get all the crew there. They got to eat. They got to sleep somewhere. I mean, it is a big expense, you know. And it, you're right. Everybody's looking for sponsorship. Everybody has something different to offer. You know, I think that we have one of the best teams out there that can, you know, the best bang for the buck is on our team. You know, we can only get better.
Well, Andy, hopefully there's some sponsors out there listening tonight. You just never know who'll be listening to the show, and I will tell them if you want to really get some punch for your buck, Andy Kelly's the man to see.
And Andy, you keep up on your andykellyracing.blogspot.com.
Yes, sir.
So you got a picture of your two biggest fans there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They, you know, they love funny cars. It's amazing, you know. They don't really watch other forms of racing or other classes, but when the funny car comes up, especially when I'm on TV on Speed Channel, you know, they just, and I always tape it. And they want to rewind it and watch it again. But yeah, you keep up with me at andykellyracing.com. That's KELLEY. You know, we try to update our blog. You know, and for the, you know, the website, I want to thank Paul Constantine because he's done most of our PR stuff all year. And this was his first year. He's a big football fan. Well, he's a converted nitro fan now. He called me up on the phone sometimes and said, man, I just built some nitro. You know, it's just a joke that we have. And, you know, it is very intense. And the thing about our team, we're down-to-earth people. You know, I'm the average IHRA fan that's just living a dream driving a nitro funny car. You know, I love being out there interacting with the fans, promoting the sponsors that we have. You know, whether they give me $1 or they give me $1,000, I'm going to promote them, you know, to the hilt and try to get them more, because if they get more, hopefully they'll help me more next time. And that's the name of the game.
Well, I hope it sure happens for you in 2008, Andy, because hopefully I'll be at a lot of the races and get a chance to talk to you and maybe have you in the winner's circle. And I would love to do that interview with you, absolutely. Well, Andy, I tell you, we do have to get moving on because I hate to say this, Jack, but I could talk to this guy.
Oh, yeah. I made a talk.
I could talk your ears off, trust me.
Hey, no doubt. I made quite a few notes, and we'll make this interview available, of course, on realracingusa.com, and people can come in and we'll steal a picture of you off your website and put with it so people can come check it out, man.
Make sure it's my good side.
Oh, we will. Absolutely.
Hey, if I could, I would like to thank Holbrook Performance Parts, and some of my sponsors if I can.
Absolutely.
That's Hobart Performance Parts out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and they specialize in Hemi, you know, racing components, supercharger, you know, one bolt to a turnkey deal. I mean, they'll hook you up. Conrad Doubt Victory One Racing Valves. You know, we did not have one valve problem this year running the Victory One valves. General Machine out of Anderson, JRD Hauling and Grading, Vickery Speed Shop, you know, the Impact dealer, he's right down here below me, going to help me out next year. You know, Nitro Radios, they hooked me up with a radio set. Ross Pistons, Williams Performance, Moore Performance. Trevor with Safety Solutions, he helped me out. Richmond Gear, Hartman Machine Works, Horton Race Cars, you know, IHRA, Evanol, Drag Review Magazine for putting, you know, putting our pictures of our car in their magazine. Brian Olson and Steve, everybody just doing a great job of the commentary on the, you know, Speed Channel. And at the racetrack itself, I mean, that's, you know, you need recognition, and more connection you get, the more sponsorship hopefully you can acquire. And that's just what it's all about. But some special thanks, I want to thank my brother Neil. He stays here and runs our family business while me and my dad and our crew go out and chase a dream. And you know, he wants to come out and race with us, but we have to make a living, and he stays back to run our shop while we're gone. Jimmy Rector, Monty and Buck Todd, Virgil Hartman, John Smith, and, of course, my wife for taking care of my children while I'm gone to do this, and all the wives of my crew that allow them to go and chase a dream as well. And hopefully we'll be there in 08 to do better than we did this year. You know, if not, if we don't do better, another top five, you know, that'll be outstanding as well. As long as we can just keep racing, that's what we want to do.
I'll tell you what, Andy Kelly, ladies and gentlemen, the man who's chasing the dream, and that's pretty well sums it up, I would say. That's every drag racer, chasing the dream. Andy, thanks for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks to RealRacingUSA.com. I mean, that's, you know, Steve and Jack, I really appreciate it. And any time you need somebody on your show, you call me.
You're on the list, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care, Andy.
Good night, y'all. Bye-bye.
What a character.
All right, Steve. I'll tell you what.
You could sit down on three stools in a garage somewhere, and he basically could tell you stories endlessly all night long.
No doubt. Let's go to quick break. We're going to come back with Damon Hazleton, I guess, huh?
We're going to go from Nitro Funny Car to the class that starts it off in IHRA. We're going to the man who's the new world champion in Hot Rod.
All right, we'll be right back.
A technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Your minimal experience flying a plane will never land you at a reputable airline. Luckily, you don't work for one.
Look at me, I'm flying.
Sure, we're concerned for our lives. Just not as concerned as saving $9 on a round trip to Fort Myers.
Oh!
The most direct route to Houston?
through Fort Lauderdale, with layovers in Detroit, Vancouver, and Kalamazoo.
I can't feel my legs.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Lido, skipper of the skies. You put the fly in fly-by-night operation.
Mr. Discounted Line Pilot Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no batteries filling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
And we are back with Straight Lining with Stevie and Stevie Letemp. And we have with us now Damon Hazleton. Go ahead, Stevie.
Well, actually, probably the best name to call him is Hot Rod Hazleton. He's now the new world champion in the International Hot Rod Association in the Hot Rod class, which is the first class that comes out every morning. And I'll tell you what, they come out with a vengeance. It's probably one of the toughest classes to compete in. A little breakdown for the fans out there in Hot Rod. It's based on a 1090 index class, and they want to hit it without going under. And this is the man that is the absolute best at doing it. Damon, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. So, basically, have you ever figured out how many cars you had to beat this year to become the world champion?
Well, I wouldn't have any idea, actually. There's a bunch of them, I know that.
It's not uncommon to go to an IHRA race and see 100-plus hot rod cars.
Yeah. It's not uncommon at all, that's for sure.
Curiosity. Now, you won this by running divisional race where we have our Pro-Am series and then, of course, in the national events.
Mm-hmm.
What is your Pro-Am division?
Division 3, the North Stars. Mm-hmm.
How many races do you have to win to, or route you have to compete in, I should say, to win?
Well, you can, I believe you can go to 8 divisional races, and of those 8 races, you claim your best 5 finishes towards your points total.
And then how about in the national events?
Nationally, you're allowed to go to, 6 races, and you claim your best 3 towards your points total nationally.
So when the smoke cleared, you were the man. Curiosity,
sure.
How much did you win it by?
5 points, actually. John Furr came as close as he possibly could to coming around me the last race of the year in Rockingham.
That's actually, in a 10, you get like 10 points to win a round, am I correct?
Yeah, that's half a round.
Wow. So in other words, if you even breathed wrong, you were gone.
Yeah, I guess you could put it that way.
Looks like John apparently had a hiccup, and that was it. You put him away.
Yes, sir.
Well, curiosity, what got you started in the hot rod class?
Well, actually, it was my dad. My dad's been racing for 35 years, and I traveled around with him when I was young quite a bit, and I jumped into his car 1 year. Well, about 5-6 years ago, and ran hot rod with his car, and it's always something I wanted to do again, and decided to give her a try this year, and that's what we did.
You guys start out with the intent of going all the way for the points, or
well, actually,
what was your views on getting the year started?
Actually, like being that this was our first year in hot rod with our car. We were just going to use 07 kind of as a tune-up year for 08. We were going to go to some of the divisionals and maybe hit a couple national events and just kind of get the feel for it and then maybe make a strong run for it in 08. And the first Pro-Am race of the year, we went out and won. So that kind of changed our minds in a hurry for us.
Well, curiosity, you know, we just got through talking to Andy Kelly, and he talked about expenses. What type of expenses do you incur with your team trying to go from point A to point B?
Well, honestly, for us, the biggest expense is fuel, towing. You know, with gas like it is nowadays, it's not cheap for anybody to do anything. And but other than that, you know, just your standard entry fees and race fuel and wheels, like tires and, you know, stuff like that, just maintenance through the year.
But, well, tell me a little bit about your car, too.
Well, it's a 92 Camaro. It's equipped with a 379 cubic inch aluminum head small block Chevy. It runs on alcohol. It's got a 2-speed Power Glide transmission in it. That's prepared for me by Randy Biddle at Biddle Performance Glide. And it's got a Dana 60 rear end in it. And 14 inch tires on the back.
What kind of gear? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to divulge or any secrets or anything, but can you tell me what kind of gear you run in that thing?
It's a 537 Richmond Pro gear.
Does that work as well in the eighth mile and quarter mile? Do you have to change gears whenever you go from eighth to quarter mile racing? Or
no.
Run the same gear no matter what?
If we just keep the same gear in it, just keep everything the same all the time. It's a big key in 90 class racing, trying to keep everything the same.
Yeah, because I would assume, just listening to the motor, as far as motor size and everything, to obtain the horsepower to get to 1090 is no problem. The problem is, I would assume, is getting consistent at that 1090. Have you ever had a perfect race?
I've never had a perfect race, no. I've had a couple 2,000 packages, but that's as close as I've ever come.
2,000. You know, they say it takes, I believe, 8,000 to blink your eye. So that's awful tight. Now, for a lot of the race fans out there, may not understand what a 2,000 package is. Could you explain that really in detail, just what a 2,000 package is?
Sure. A 2,000 package is the 2,000th of a second of a deviation away from a perfect run, a perfect run being a perfect reaction time, which is .000. And a perfect DT, which in my class is 10.900. So a 2,000th package could be a perfect light, and then your ET be like 10.902. That would be 2,000th off perfect, would make that a 2,000th package.
Have you ever had any perfect lights where you were actually .00000?
No. Well, actually, I believe I may have had one. Actually, earlier at this year at Milan's Pro-Am event, I was .0001 red first round.
That's not the way you want it, though.
No, not at all.
I'll tell you what. So basically, consistency is the secret. It's not necessarily a perfect run.
Right. That's for sure.
How close do you have to be to that perfect run? What kind of average times did you have with your hot rod car?
Well, I try to keep everything. My philosophy is to try to keep everything within a 200 package. You can keep yourself within a 200th package, your total run, you know, you're giving yourself a good chance. And, you know, a lot of things, you know, start happening your way at that point.
Well, curiosity, how in God's name do you guys actually, I've seen you do it, you're consistent, you can get down there. How do you do that leaving the tree? Because your eye is watching the Christmas tree, and you're following the lights coming down. And then when you leave, how does your body, how do you get your body to react the same every single time? I mean,
I guess just through repetition of times down the track, doing it over and over again. Once you let go of the button, your senses take over and just start doing what you do best.
How about your eyes on that Christmas tree? Is there something you'd look for on the bulbs?
Not necessarily something we look for on the bulbs. I like to try to focus on the top bulb. A lot of guys do it differently. A lot of guys will focus on the bottom yellow, but focus on the top bulb and wait to see the first flash.
So how about that flash? when I used to race, I used to look at a flash. Now, of course, they've changed the bulbs. In the old days, with the old-style bulb, I used to see the bulbs start to burn. Then there was like a mid-range in the burn, and then it started to go out. And I used to pick a spot in that bulb.
Right.
These new LED bulbs, I've watched them, and the flash is so fast. Is there a way that you can play with the flash of the bulb, or pretty well
I don't
got to go when you see it?
Yeah, that's for me, I just got to go when you see it. I mean, I guess I don't have a trained eye enough to be able to depict a point in the bulb on a LED bulb, because it's just when they're on, bam, they're on.
Well, for next year, you plan to run again and go for a double on this world championship deal?
Oh, we sure are.
How are we looking for sponsorship?
We've been kind of sniffing around, trying to find some things here since the season's ended. I've got a couple leads. Matt Zapp at Zapp Trailer Sales is going to help me out next year, along with Bob Freeland at Bulldog Art and Sign. And we're going to go from there and try to find a couple more.
Well, I'll tell you what, I wish you all the best in the coming year, 2008. It never gets easier because all these guys, you know, now that you have this big red X on your back everywhere you go now.
Yeah, big bullseye.
That's right. They'll be coming after you. But I tell you what, I will say this, ladies and gentlemen, they're going to have to be good because this man is the best of the best. And he didn't get there from not being good, I'll tell you what, because anywhere from 75 to 100 cars is not uncommon to see come into an IHRA national event in the hot rod class. And, you know, many times the pros, they have to, their concern is basically on anywhere between 8 to 16 vehicles in a qualifying field, which they qualify usually in the 20s, where in the hot rod class, you have to compete against sometimes as many as 100 or more. So really, you go a whole lot more rounds to win a race than the pros do.
Yep.
It should be fun, man. Like I say, folks, if you would like to see this machine, this little Camaro apparently is going to be on display, as we found out this evening, at the banquet, the IHRA banquet up there in Ohio. So it would be an excellent opportunity to get a look at a really, really super fine hot rod machine. And also have the chance to meet the champion as well, because I'm sure you're going to be up there by the car and everything, and it should be a really neat experience. I want to thank you once again for taking the time to out of your schedule to come talk with us this evening, and it's an honor to talk to you. As you know, I love my hot rod cars, and I'll be looking for you come the beginning of the season.
And, I look forward to seeing you.
2008. Well, listen, guys, thanks for coming on this evening.
You too, Steve. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Have a great time at the banquet.
I'm sure I will.
All right, you take care, my friend.
Dude, we'll see you.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, Steve, there's two guys that star in the one aspect of drag racing, and I guess we're going to shift gears here pretty soon, huh?
Well, we're getting ready to throw a pair of tires away. We're going to go from drivers to riders as we get ready to head into a couple of the guys that race in the All-Harley Drag Racing Association.
And who do we have tonight? We have Nate Carnahan. And
Carnahan will be first, and then Dan Norland.
All right. All right, cool. Well, let's fire up this little thing here, and we'll be right back with the other half of our drag racing show, Straight Lining with Stevie.
City Racing, it's about winning. From lug nuts to complete race cars and 12,000 parts in between. Whether you're new to racing or a seasoned veteran, you'll find what you need at Port City Racing. Since 1981, Port City Racing has been producing winners, drag racing, circle track, and much more. You can now browse through our Port City Racing catalog on the web. View and shop online right from your race shop. PortCityRacing.com. That's PortCityRacing.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
They say those who can't play coach. Apparently those who can't coach sit 30 rows back, shirtless, shouting obscenities.
Oh, that's right, motherfucker.
Thanks to you, our team is armed with game-winning tips like catch the ball and throw it.
Shout it out loud.
You stink. That sucks. What a bunch of losers. Not just catcalls, but subtle psychological ploys to prod your team to victory.
Reverse psychology.
So here's to you, old Sultan of Shouting. Because while there may be no I in team, thanks to you, there's always an F and a U. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Power Master is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. Power Master is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA. And that's the sound that tells us we're back live straight line with Stevie, and Stevie, I guess it's time for us to shift gears to the other half of our drag racing show for this night, and we're going to talk about some all Harley drag racing superstars.
You know, Jack, we go from drivers to riders, and I learned that these are riders real quick whenever I first started announcing. They informed me real quick that they're not drivers, they are riders.
There you go.
And so it's a pleasure tonight to have Nate Carnahan on here. And Nate... we talked about this before. Nate is a young man that kind of struck me. When we were talking one time, I was asking him questions, and he said what his hobby was, giving his wife a hard time. Has nothing to do with bikes, but I've got to ask you, how do you get away with that, Nate?
Oh, I don't know. She's a real good sport. She's real supportive of everything. So, you know, I just like to tease her a little bit, and she calls my bike out there. That's my other woman. That's my first lady out there. So she says I'm having an affair with my motorcycle. So, you know, well, I always tease her about that a little bit.
Well, talking about the other woman, how about tell us a little bit about that bike sitting out there in the shop?
The bike was put together by Departure Bike Works here in Richmond, Virginia. It's a 74 cubic inch stock four Sportster. Running 13-to-1 compression, and they cleaned up the heads, poured and polished, you know, bench flowed the heads, bigger valves, and sent the transmission off the zippers and had them back cut the gears. And we run on motor, we run 1150 index, and we turn nitrous on, we run the 1090 index, so. She runs pretty consistent numbers, and we've been doing pretty good this year. We've only blown it up once, so.
Only blown it up once. Well, curiosity, you know, that would be a great name for your bike, The Other Woman.
Yeah, The Other Woman, yeah. Yeah,
and I can understand your wife probably agrees with that, too. So you need to have maybe a little custom airbrushing done there and put on the bike, The Other Woman. Well, let me ask you this. You know, we've heard from the guys over there with the four-wheel classes, from anything from the hot rod class to the nitro classes. One of their big problems was expenses. You incur the same type of problems?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, anytime, you know, you're talking about traveling out of state, you know, the fuel costs, you not only have to contend with entry fees, but, you know, fuel costs. And if you're not traveling in an RV, then you have hotel costs. And, you know, it all adds up real quick, especially anybody with you, you know, as far as the crew or anything. So, you know, money goes real fast, especially by this time of the year. For me, the racing's done. There's two more events left in the season, and we won't be able to make it out just because of the distance you're talking about and the fuel cost it would take to get out there.
You're in Virginia, right?
Yeah, from Richmond, Virginia, I figured it'd probably cost $2,000 round trip just in fuel. So that's quite a big chunk for me to put out there to go through the race. So maybe next year, though, if we're in a top 10 points contention, then we'll go ahead and bite the bullet and head on out to Vegas. So, but we won't be able to do it this year.
You know, Nate, that is staggering when you think about it. Just to get out and back, no food costs, no entries, nothing. $2,000 on fuel at its current price. And I don't know about the Virginia area, but down here in South Carolina, in the last week, it's gone up almost 10 cents a gallon.
Yep.
It's climbing. It's not going to get better, it looks like.
Yeah, it went up about 25 cents in the last 2 weeks.
Holy smokes.
That's the way it is. That's the way it is in Florida, too. In the last couple of weeks, it's skyrocketing.
That affects motorsports big time. Curiosity, on your bike, other than fuel costs, what type of maintenance does that incur to run in the two bracket classes?
Basically, it's not too bad as far as the maintenance goes on that. The reason we blew it up this year, we had a piston disintegrate. Trying to stay on a budget, getting started, you know, being a rookie year, we tried cutting costs, and it was a hard lesson learned, but instead of using quality forged pistons, I used cast pistons, and it just couldn't hold up to the pounding and ended up disintegrating a rear cylinder piston. And so when we went back through it, you know, we put the, you know, top quality parts in there, thanks to Departure. And now that it's set up the way it is, we probably, realistically speaking, ought to be able to run, you know, 2-3 seasons without having to crack the motor open, other than maybe freshening up the heads. So the maintenance on the bike itself isn't too bad. You know, you go through, you know, spark plugs left and right, trying to, you know, keep a good, you know, plugs and things like that, but for the most part, just, you know, change the oil and change the transmission fluid frequently and just look for any particles in the oil, and as long as everything looks clean, just keep on getting it.
Well, you know, when you travel from point A to B, do you use a motorhome or just how do you travel?
For the most part of this season, I use my pickup, and stay in hotels and things like that. I just recently bought an RV and had the pleasure of taking it to Rockingham, and was asking myself the whole time, you know, how did I do this before, you know, without an RV? It makes it a lot more convenient. Believe it or not, the fuel cost wasn't all that different than hauling it with the pickup, you know, because the RV, you get 8 miles to the gallon whether you're towing or not. With the pickup, you know, yeah, I was averaging around 9.5 miles to the gallon, so didn't really occur.
That was a big savings then.
Yeah, I mean, you 250 a weekend for a hotel, yeah, it does help out. So hopefully.
Well, how are we looking for 2008 now? You got your motorhome. So.
Yeah, 2008, we're making a few changes on the front end of the bike. We're going to lower it down a little bit, put a lighter front end on it. We're going to continue running Super Eliminator and Screaming Eagle Performance, but we also have a bike being built right now by my crew chief, Roger Boykin. He's putting together a S&S 113 motor on a DNG chassis, and we're planning on running Super Gas with that bike for this season, and get all the kinks worked out of it and massage it a little bit, and maybe by the 2009 season, if all goes well, the future plan is bumping up the Pro Modified. So right now we're just taking it one little step at a time.
I'll tell you what, that Pro Modified class, that is a handful. There are some real hitters rolled into that baby.
We were going to be paying attention to that, and that's why we're just taking it one little step at a time. We're going to get through this season running super gas and see how the bike does and see what else we can, what kind of times we can get out of it and go for the gusto, and then the fall and winter of 2008 we'll tear it down and make the changes we need to make to it to get a little bit more out of it and hopefully be in contention to run Pro Modified with it.
So it looks like 2009 we need to make a phone call to Randy Borjo and need to tell him it's time to move over. Clinic both look out.
Maybe so. Hopefully this year we'll be able to retain the sponsors we have and maybe pick up a few more. So that'll help out with the cost, certainly. Without I wouldn't be able to have gone as long as I had this year.
Well, I will tell a lot of the race fans out there, those that maybe just haven't been lucky enough to experience the All Harley Drag Racing Association races, it is really some great drag racing, extremely fast. And there's a group of riders in every single class who are just so tight in the points that it's incredible. And I think it's an excellent place for a sponsor to put his dollars if he wants good exposure. You guys travel all over the country, and Nate Carnahan's talking about traveling the full circuit, which means you can see him in California, you can see him in Vegas, you can see him in Oregon, you can see him in St. Louis, you can see him all over the East Coast. So, from Florida to Virginia to just, one racetrack to the next. And plus, there are other races you run besides that, am I correct?
Yes, I run the local Pro Bike Series, ET Bracket Race, and I finished fourth in points this season, and we'll be shooting for that number one spot next season in the 2008 season. So we had a pretty good year down there, and local track and all that. We get about 14 races in the season, and in between hauling off, going to state for the All Harley Drags, running down there, so it makes for a busy summer. That's what I was saying earlier. My wife's a real good sport about it. She's real supportive of the hobby and backs me up all the way. And then my daughter Lily, she's my number one fan. So if I don't go racing, she gets upset. So
that's cool.
So your daughter pretty well goes in there and helps work on mom that so that you get to go racing. Then is that what you're saying?
That's right. And when Lily's ready to go and watch the race, and she tells mom she's going, so she's my number one fan.
Well, Nate, I appreciate you coming on this evening, and enjoyed talking with you, and I really do wish you best for 2008. So, guys, if you're looking for somebody that you'd like to invest some funds in, here's somebody that I think would do a very good job giving you exposure, Nate Carnahan, and the man that rides the other woman. Thanks for coming on, Nate.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Nate.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, boy.
Just a super nice guy. And he's one of the young and up-and-coming riders. And he has contention of moving up into the pro classes. So you can hear by, just what he has lined up and what they're working on and stuff. He's doing it right. He's taking his time, and he's getting that seat time that he needs to get.
Yeah, and did I get that right, that he's going to expand next year to Super Gas, and that'll put him in, what, three?
They're going to have two bikes.
Ah, gotcha. Sure. Yeah.
So, and then I don't know that they're going to compete with both of them in the all-Harley thing. I believe he'll probably run some of them there for sure. But, he'll be running multiple classes with the all-Harleys. Plus, he runs a local type of a circuit as well. So, a lot of exposure there for somebody.
We're going to make a jump here in a few minutes. When we come back, we're going all the way from Richmond, Virginia, to the mountains of Colorado, I guess.
Well, out to John Denver country, yeah.
Okay, there you go. So we'll be right back.
All right.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman on the web at thebrakeman.com.
All right, and we are back with Straight Line and with Stevie. And as promised, we made the jump all the way across the country to Colorado with Dan Norlin. Take it away, Stevie.
Well, thanks. And we do have Dan Norlin on the phone. If you listen real closely in the background, you can hear John Denver music. That's how far up in the mountains he is. Out there. Am I correct? In Denver, Colorado, is that right?
You got it.
You have had one heck of a season.
Yeah, it's been going pretty good for me, Steve. It's coming down to the wire here now in the last couple races, so we'll get to California and Vegas and see if we can hold on and battle it out.
How close are we on the points now? We're talking not one, but two classes. Tell me a little bit about each class.
First class would be, I guess, ET, which I was kind of sitting a ways out of points there until Rockingham. I won the Rockingham race, which there was had to be 81 bikes, I think, in the field, which I generated 170 points out of that win, and I didn't have to drop a race since I had not raced all 10 races yet for the season. That this next race in California would be my 11th race now where I'll lose points, so that gained me 170 full points, which shot me right up 31 points behind Bob Drapp in the ET class, so that puts me in the running there, depending on how we do here now in California and Vegas. I know, looking at Bob Drapp and looking at the point situation, both Bob and I have races to drop in California and Vegas, and doing the numbers, I believe we both drop the same amount of points in the next two races, so it puts me about 34 points behind them going into California and Vegas.
So going out to Pomona, that's roughly 10 points around, is that right?
20 points around.
20 points. So you're sitting there two rounds behind Drapp.
Yep, I'm two rounds behind Drapp in the ET class. And in the SEP class currently, I'm 131 points in front of Greg Best. But Greg has only been to eight races this year, and I know he's going out to California and to Vegas. So he won't have to drop any races. And I will have to drop points out of the next two races now, and I believe I have to drop like 45 points or so between the two races. So I figured it out. Right now I currently hold about an 89-point lead in front of Greg Best. So I'm going to have to go at least one round in California and Vegas to start to gain some points in those classes. So it's going to be really crucial that I at least try and stay with Greg here now through California and Vegas to see if I can stay ahead and finish it off and win the championship.
Well, I know Pomona, California is important to go rounds there, but I would think, now correct me if I'm wrong, when you go into Vegas, they have that big shootout race, and this brings in all the ET and SEP bikes, tons of them come rolling in there, which does one thing, it either helps you or it ends your race. But the fact that you go so many rounds to win it, you can really pile points up at Vegas. Am I correct?
You're exactly right, Steve. The race for the ET Championship, in my mind, will not be decided at all until Las Vegas. Again, in Vegas, we are going to generate probably over 100 bikes in the ET class because most of the bikes that run in the shootout will run in the ET class for sure. And with that many bikes in the class, now ET is 20 points for every round you go, and with that many bikes in there, it's probably going to be 170 to a 200-point race which could make or break anybody. It gives any of the top three, four guys in ET a shot at the national championship just by winning the Vegas ET race.
So Vegas is really, really big for a world championship. Plus, now, tell me a little bit about this shootout. There's major bucks coming into this shootout deal that you're going to be competing in.
There is major bucks, and I think you see a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety with guys racing in that shootout. We all would like to take that payday. Of course, taking that payday is better than any championship you could possibly win. I had to laugh because last year I was sitting at the breakfast table on Monday morning with J.P. Henderzak, and he had just won the national championship in the ET class. And he's like, yeah, I got a nice payday of, like, I think it was $1,500 is what he acquired. And I had runnered up in the shootout last year, and I told him, I said, yeah, well, I got a paycheck of $3,000. I think I doubled your money. And he's like, yeah, you did that one race, and I worked my butt off to all these races throughout the whole year, and this is what I got. So it does mean a lot, and it is a big payday to win that shootout. And I think that's why you see so many bikes involved in that shootout. There's nothing better than winning that shootout, because it could definitely set you up for the next year as far as gas money and the race program.
You know, I detected a distinct confidence in your voice and everything you talk in these racing. You're looking at going to a race with a tremendous amount of competitors, but you're looking at going rounds. Basically, you're telling, from what I'm hearing, you're saying, I'm going to win this thing. I'm going to get those rounds. And I know you're not alone now. There's five more guys that got a shot at you. But I really admire your confidence on this. Of course, you backed that up, too. You did a great job at Rockingham now. You showed you could do it there, and like I say, it's not uncommon to see you really go at it. So it's going to be a war out there, I believe.
Yeah, a lot of it for me, Steve, has to do with having fun. You know, every time I go to the race, when I'm with Susie, my crew chief and girlfriend, she stresses highly to just go out and have fun. When you start really trying hard and you start pushing the tree and you start thinking about where you sit in points and things like that, you really start to make mistakes. And racing the ET class is all about racing yourself and running the number that your bike can run and running consistently and doing the same thing. So as long as you're going out there to have fun, which is why we're all out there, then you start to see the results and you start doing well. And I've noticed for myself that if I go to have fun, I do well. If I go there to compete and really buckle down, I start making mistakes and I start going out early rounds. So I have to keep myself calm and make sure that I go there just to have fun, and then everything else will fall into place.
Dan, I talked with Karen Raffa a little while back, and she was telling me some stories about you. She said that you were the only guy she ever saw that had one bike, four plates on it, and you come out there in a pickup truck and a tent. And truly, you're on a budget now, and you make it work. And four plates on one bike, that means you're racing four classes. That is a heavy load.
Well, and to be able to do that, you have to keep a bike pretty much close to stock. The more you soup up a bike and the more you put so much money into it, the chances are things are going to break. I always kid the guys in the staging lanes when I go up there, because I race my V-Rod that I have, which is a 2002 V-Rod. It's completely stock. I've done a few bolt-on modifications. I've put a pipe on it, and a power commander and an air cleaner on it, and a sprocket upgrade on it, the belt upgrade on it that Screaming Eagle puts out. And those are the only things I've done. I don't have a shift light on the bike. I don't have an air shifter. I don't have a two-stage rev limiter. None of those electronics. And I see so many guys come back to the line and tell me that, oh, geez, I went out that round because I missed a shift, or my air shifter didn't work, or I had electrical problems, and I just kind of chuckle and say, yeah, if you took that stuff off your bike, you wouldn't have to worry about it. You know, shift with your foot and use your clutch and watch your tachometer on the bike, and things are good. The only thing I do to my bike every year is change the oil and the spark plugs and the clutch pack once or twice a year, and that's about it. And the bike's been very consistent for me. It runs the number right out the gate, and I think if you do more work to it, you make a bike faster, you have a harder time being consistent with it. So if you keep it stock and keep it simple, it makes for more of a consistent bike.
So in other words, you're more of the old-school type racer. Instead of high-tech, to be make everything tight enough and be more consistent, you're still out there riding by the seat of your pants.
Got it. You got it. That's the only way to go. And it just gives me that little extra smile when I have to tell guys, hey, look, I don't use none of that stuff. You guys can use those wheelie bars, and you guys can use those air shifters and all that extra gadgets. I don't need that stuff. I'll just go out there and run the number consistently down the track. And I have to say, in the bracket classes, I've learned over the years more than anything else, and I bought myself one of those little practice trees, and a good 80-90% of your races are won or lost at the light. And if you can get good at cutting good lights, you have a good shot of winning the race. And I see that now more and more winning that I do. A lot of it's won. And a prime example would be Dean Druschel in the SE class. He's very good at running 1090s, but that guy can cut a light. On the pro tree, he's in the low O's all the time, and that gives you such an advantage. And when you can work on being in the low O's all the time, no matter what tree you're running, you automatically gain the advantage out the gate. And that's the advantage that you see at the end of the track when you're a bike length in front of the guy and you can roll off the gas and not run quite on your number, but yet still beat him.
Well, talking about beating him, what are we looking for now in 2008? We had talked earlier, and there was mumbling that possibly you may not be out there.
Yeah, I've decided in 2008, Steve, that I'm going to back out a little bit. You know, we all know that gas prices are getting higher and higher out there, and it gets very expensive to drive, especially when you're a one-man team, to drive cross-country, when you're racing in some of the bracket classes and whatnot, when you have to flip the bill of $1,000 in gas round trip to get to and from a race, and then you figure there's at least two races a month. Sometimes there's more, as per August, when you have Sturgis and Woodburn and Tennessee, I believe, in there. It can get very expensive. And so for me, coming up now, I've decided I've got to step back and try and readjust finances and get ahead of the ball game. Of course, unless there's somebody interested out there that's looking for a rider for a bike, I would definitely be interested in jumping on another bike and bumping up in some classes and being competitive. But for me, financially, I can't do it myself, and I have to kind of back out a little bit, put myself in a better situation to where I can come back. I'm not saying I'm done for good, but I'm going to back out for a year, maybe two or so, and get my finances in line and then come back at it again. So
Dan Narlin may be sitting on the side for 2008, but 2009 could return with a vengeance. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what you hear, and like there again, unless somebody's looking for a rider out there or whatnot, that's the goal. The goal is to back out a little bit, readjust a little bit, and then come back at it again. I have the racing passion and the racing bug in me. It makes it difficult to just walk away from it, so I will retool. I will get a grip on the finances a little bit, get some money saved up, and plan a new season, hopefully 2009. That's the goal, but if we can get things running again and caught up on debt, then maybe sooner. I don't plan to be away next year for good. I would like to go to at least a couple races, Sturgis, maybe Oregon, Vegas for sure. You know, you can't pass up that shootout. You got to go no matter what to that, just take a shot at the money. But I plan on hopefully being back in 2009.
Stevie, as you know, as Dan was explaining about some of the things that some of his competitors use that he doesn't use. And I was sitting here listening to this, and I'm thinking, this is one of the most practical racers I've ever heard. It's like you just breathe practicality, and then you lay the bombshell on that, okay, we got to stop, sit back, take a look, get our finances in order, then come back. You're just too practical, Dan.
And that's how it's got to be. We do this for fun, and I'm very competitive. I like to win, of course, and so does everybody else out there at the track. The camaraderie is great between all the racers, and that's another reason we go. We like to hang out with each other in the pits at night and talk racing and friendships and things like that. That's a good part of it, but when it comes race day, we're all out there to compete and we're all out there to win. But it's a hobby, and we have to look at it that way. We all have real jobs. We all go back home to the wives, the families, the girlfriends, and we put in our 8 to 12 hour days at work, and we plan on getting back out to the track, building our motors, building our race bikes in our off time, and going back out and having fun. You know, everybody has a black hole on where they spend their money. Some will spend it at the bars two or three nights a week, going out and drinking or whatnot. Others will do crazy things with their money, but we spend ours on racing. That's our passion, and I think you see that at the track a lot.
You know, there's another good name for a bike, the black hole.
You got it.
That's probably one of the best statements I've heard in a long time. Believe me, it's so easy just to take those $20 bills and just one after another, they're gone, they're gone, they're gone, they're gone.
They go real quick.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on tonight, Dan. And it breaks my heart to see that it might be the last two races I get to see you in. Hopefully next year I'll see you in a couple of them. But I do understand, and it's a problem right now. I think that whether you're a driver or you're a rider, you're all in the same boat, to where there is a major problem with expenses, and it takes a lot of time away from work and so on. And what Jack was saying earlier, you are so practical, and you're correct in doing it, and that's what will make you successful, is the fact that you realize you need to lay off for 1 year to regroup so that you can continue to advance on up the scale. A lot of guys I know that have gone out there and they just threw the wallet at it with everything they had and lost everything they had. And I admire you for that. I just I do hate to see, you know, riders such as yourself and Nate Carnahan and guys like that would love to be out there running. And I enjoy watching race. And then, but unfortunately, because of expenses, it makes it stop. So once again, I do want to thank you for taking time. And I will see you at Pomona, and I wouldn't miss the race at Vegas for anything in the world. When we have that shootout, that is going to be absolutely wild.
Good luck out west, Dan.
Great. Thanks, guys. Much appreciated.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Dan.
Sounds good.
All right, Stevie.
You know, Jack, it is a shame. I just these are great guys. I just can't tell you until you get to meet them in person.
Sure.
Just great guys. And the almighty dollar, which seems to rule the world, unfortunately.
Well, this is, you know, we cover motorsports on Real Racing USA and our other websites, and we cover motorsports, you know, from drag racing, all Harley drag racing, stock car racing, all sorts of motorsports. We cover swamp buggies, you know. We cover all kinds of different forms of motorsports. And I'll tell you, this is a theme that is running through every part of motorsports, and that is the prices of, especially the prices of fuel. It is it's not a good situation, and I'm sure that everybody at the sanctioning levels and so forth will gradually have to start making some changes to make things be able to continue at the high level they do now.
I don't know if perhaps the Harley organization can go to divisions, a lot like what IHRA and NHRA have done, if that will help, where they can race divisional races and only have to run partial on the national event scale. That probably would help to some degree, but then again, I don't know if even that would be enough. Well, I'll tell you, Jack, they're all my heroes. I've been a very lucky man to have been able to go out and meet them, talk about them, and learn about them. There's a lot of things of valuable lessons can be learned from guys just like Dan Norlin. What a super nice guy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Andy Kelly.
Dan Norlin's out there.
Can't wait to get Andy Kelly back on. We talked to him in the first hour with the guys with the four wheels. But, yeah, he's a real interesting guy, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, Andy is quite a character. I can't wait till we get down to Texas this year and see how he does at San Antonio. Should be a lot of fun.
All right, so you're headed off here in the next couple of weeks. You're going to be way out west.
Oh, I'm leaving tomorrow, and I'm going to be gone for 2.5 weeks. We're going to go out to Pomona, and we have a major race out there for the All-Harley Drag Racing Association. And as well, from Pomona, then we'll roll into Vegas, where we're going to have that big shootout we talked about, along with the final points race of the season. And also we'll have the All-Harley Drag Racing Association, their banquet will be held as well, where all the awards will be given out and stuff. And I'm really looking forward to that, because for the first time, I'm going to get to be around a lot of my heroes, and they're not going to be worried about fixing this or work on that. it's time where you can actually just sit down one-on-one and get them in a relaxed situation and just talk and have a great time. And it's going to be a great time.
One thing I look forward to here over the coming few months and what would be the off season, so to speak, maybe we'll spend some time with some of the officials from these like the IHRA and the All Harley Drag Racing Association and get what it's like, the sport's like from their perspective.
Well, you know, that's a very good point, Jack. people like Mike Baker, here's a guy that he's under a lot of load. This is the man with IHRA, who he's the head tech man. He's the man that makes the decisions. He's got to make the hard calls, and he does what he feels is best for the sanctioning body and for all the racers. And I would love to get him away when he's got a little time to breathe and have him on the show one night. I think you would find he's quite an interesting individual. So, yeah, we need to work on something like that.
All right. That'll be coming up in next week. Man, we'll try to get it out here earlier in the week. Who's going to be our guest this week? And so people can know what's happening. And it's pretty cool.
What happened? And please, the people have to understand that I run into a situation to where I don't know where the story's at until I see it. And when I'm out there on the road, you know, all of a sudden I may have one thing planned, and suddenly, boom! I guarantee you, I'm going to run into some really neat stuff. When I get out to Pomona, California, and into Vegas, and there'll be tons of stories there.
And you'll hear all about it here on Straight Lining with Stevie.
That's right. I promise you, I won't let you guys down. We'll party, party, party. We're going to have a great time drag racing.